This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
You're listening to This Day in History, a podcast dedicated to examining history from a standpoint of determining which event on any given day had the greatest impact on our lives. Now your host, Tony Hubert and Armand Kachigian.
History fans, welcome in. March 23rd here on lineupmedia.fm. This day in history, bringing you the events, the birthdays, and who kicked the bucket on this date. Tony Hubert, Armand Kachigian with you as we're brought to you by Amazon.com and by Audible.com. Got some decent dates, got some decent events, couple good birthdays. Nothing as good as yesterday in Chico Marx, who I still celebrate.
Oh, yes, we do.
But let's begin, Armand. 1775, with the famous speech delivered at St. John's Episcopal Church in Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, well. Where
one Patrick Henry.
Did he really say it or not? That's the question.
Says, give me liberty or give me death. Do you think he really said it?
I don't know. Whether he said it or not doesn't matter. He was a great, one of my favorite founding fathers, big states' rights guy, totally opposed to the Constitution, at least initially, and he was right. But, this was basically just, he was just spurring the Virginia, at the time it was Congress of, they had some sort of Congress.
It's the Second Virginia Convention.
Okay, convention, yeah. And he was spurring them to send troops to fight.
Yeah, he wants to fight.
This is saying, hey, yeah, we're gonna fight this. And this was, of course, the natural evolution of what happened after we discussed yesterday, Stamp Act and all these intolerable acts.
Well, here's the thing about the speech itself that I found interesting. There is no published record of the speech.
Right.
For 40 years.
Yeah, I think it's a guy named Wirt or whatever the hell Wirt's. I don't know. The guy that actually supposedly has this copy. Or
you are
wrote
correct.
It. Yeah.
William?
No notes.
Wirt. W-I-R-T.
Okay, right. Wirt's was the guy at Andersonville.
And he does the biography of Patrick Henry in 1817.
Okay, I knew I'd heard of him.
So now, regardless of whether he said it or not, those in attendance did have some remarks on it. For instance,
I think Washington was there.
Edmund Randolph, would tell people that the convention, after the speech was over, sat in silence for several minutes.
Well, that's what Patrick Henry typically did. That he was an orator.
Yeah, John Marshall, his son Thomas, son of the Chief Justice there.
Future Chief Justice.
Yeah, future Chief. Said, this is Thomas Marshall, not John.
Yeah.
Said it was one of the boldest, vehement, and animated speeches of eloquence that had ever been delivered. Edward Carrington, who listened outside of the church next to a window.
He probably didn't have to stand too close either.
Right. Asked to be buried on that spot.
Wow. Well, there you go.
So the speech, whether give me liberty or give me death, was uttered. Or
yeah, it really doesn't
exactly.
Matter.
It doesn't really matter because you can feel the impact of this already. Henry was named chairman of the committee assigned to build the militia. And how did the British react? Well, their governor said, "Yo, this is not good. We got to seize the gunpowder."
Yeah, well,
these guys mean business.
Well, if this be treason, make the most of it. That was Patrick Henry too. So, yep. All right, call to arms. All right, that was the biggie of the day, actually, right there. We might as well stop right now. But
it is debated. I mean, people have
– Yeah, but it doesn't matter. The effect was the same, whether he actually said it or not.
That's what everyone says. Even the historian Bernard Mayo says, look.
I'm not sure. Was Jefferson there? I think he was there too.
Well, let me see.
Anyway, let's move on. That's enough.
Among the delegates, so I'm assuming they were in the church –
Yeah.
Jefferson and Washington.
Okay.
Okay. So the Virginians are in the House. I don't know about Madison or Monroe. But the historian Bernard Mayo took exception to how Wirt worked this in. Yet he himself, as you're saying, Armand, would say, look, I've got trouble. I got a little trouble the way this is brought to print. However, The expressions of the speech seem to have burned themselves into men's memory. Certainly its spirit is that of the fiery orator who in 1775 so powerfully influenced Virginians and the events leading to American independence.
Did you do that from memory?
No, I'm reading.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I can't remember.
You're like cheating
that.
Again. All right. Now, the next one I think is more interesting, actually, because nobody knows about this.
Okay. No, no
one
knows about this.
I had
to
read up on it.
But I was wanting to quiz you because there's a couple things.
Okay,
there's
you're not going to get me because I read up on it last night.
No, I'm just not going to get you. I'm interested. But Tsar Paul I of Russia, on this date in 1801, he is struck with a sword.
Yeah.
Then he's strangled.
Right.
And finally he's trampled to death inside his bedroom at St. Michael's Castle. Now, this would be in St. Petersburg.
Yeah, that's his castle.
Okay.
He built
sword,
exorbitant
strangled,
cost.
And then trampled, all within the bedroom.
Well, this is a prelude to, that's how the Russians knock people off.
First,
remember Rasputin.
We killed him.
Yeah.
Then we hung him.
Now, I don't think that sword blow killed him, from what I've read.
It took some effort to get old Paul I out of the way.
Remember Rasputin?
Yeah, that's
okay.
True.
Well, these Russians are built of hardy stock, like Anne Boleyn, one.
But she
quick
asked
swipe.
For a clean cut.
Yeah,
she did. Let's give Anne
Mary
some credit.
Queen of Scots, same thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, but this guy, he was the son of Catherine the Great and Peter the Third. Although they don't know if Peter, although he looked like Peter the Third, but Catherine the Great had so many lovers, they're not really sure if it was.
Who could tell?
Really? Yeah. You know that one, but he looked like Peter the Third enough that he claimed to be his son, and I like reading up on this guy. He kind of rescinded a lot of Catherine's. Catherine was kind of a warmonger. She was, she wanted to fight the Persians and everybody else. And this guy said, no, I bring him back. And
why did she want to fight
settle.
The Persians?
Why not? Everybody wants to fight the Persians.
Why? Do they have oil?
Yeah, that's right. Aramco.
Yeah, no one knew what the hell oil
they
was.
They wanted to put the Shah back in power. With the help of the CIA, Catherine the Great.
We can see a whole bunch of problems coming up here in this Persian deal.
MI6.
We're going to cut it off right now.
Right. She was way ahead of her time. She knew what was coming. She wanted to put a pipeline down there.
Of course.
So anyway, he said the hell with that. We need, so he gave a boon to the serfs and tried to kind of some reformation there. And but his problem was he was a military guy. And he kind of thought himself, he's a real pomp and circumstance kind of guy. So, if somebody marched out of order or whatever.
He got rankled.
Yeah, he'd ordered him to march to Siberia,
and
stuff like that. Yeah, go straight to Siberia,
that's a
march there.
You take that
he's nuts.
You take that Siberia card away from Russia, you got a whole different deal.
Well,
you
where
can't
are you send him?
You can't send him to Siberia.
I can send him to Odessa. It's nice down there.
Right, it's too nice down there. You can't send him
to Murmansk.
Send him to the Crimea. That's my point. Why send him? Send him into the Arctic Circle.
Well, that's pretty close. Anyway, so
always sending someone to Siberia.
And he was a big time guy about the uniforms too. He wanted to, he had this real uncomfortable uniform he wanted everybody to wear.
I bet Napoleon wishes this guy would have stuck around a little longer.
Well, he fought Napoleon a little bit, but although
just a little,
he hated the French. Yeah, and anybody who hates the French can't be all bad.
You love the French.
Well, Napoleon wasn't bad. I like him.
Yeah.
Anyway, this guy made a few alliances against the French, fought them for a while, but these guys were pissed. The army was pissed. He was, off the army. And these guys that killed him?
Yeah.
I believe Alexander I came next.
Okay.
No problem. And the doctor, of course, was brought in and had to make his diagnosis. Cause of death? Want to take a guess?
Slipped on a bar of soap.
No, stroke.
Oh, a stroke.
Yeah.
You can have a stroke when you're being strangled.
Apoplexy.
Yeah.
That's what it was called.
Or trampled.
Yeah. So that doctor was.
But this line.
Went to the same school I did.
This line, trampled to death inside his bedroom. Like they brought a herd of cattle through his bedroom?
Well, no. I think they just stomped on him.
That's a stomping.
That's like Nero. That's how he killed his mother.
Not a trampling. Trampling is you're in front of a herd.
That's a stampeding.
And you get stampeded over.
No.
The stampede is the noun.
How many does it take to trample you? I mean, at a hoop concert, one guy steps on you.
No, that's not a trampling.
Oh, bull.
At least five.
Bull.
At least five.
All right. I don't agree with that. There is
a stampede.
I'm pretty sure medically
movement.
There is no minimum number. Anyway, this guy. And then they went straight to Alexander I, who was right there in the same, next bedroom.
Well.
And the guy said to him, he's only 23. He said,
you going to play by, though?
Grow up. Time to rule.
Yeah.
Yep.
You going to play ball with us?
Yeah. And he said, okay, no problem.
All
right. And these guys got away with it scot-free.
I got this.
So there you go. That was the end of Paul I. That's how they do it in Russia.
Why is Russia such a...
Well, they've straightened out. Putin's got him.
Oh, the hell, they've straightened up. They just killed a guy yesterday on the street.
It's all right. Well,
and another one fell out the window in the Ukraine.
That's defenestration.
He defenestrated awfully quickly when he hit the pavement.
All right. Yeah, well, look at London.
It's not the fall that kills you. It's the rapid deceleration.
That's correct. There's nothing amusing about that.
I mean, look at everything that happened yesterday.
Yeah, well, not good.
My mother and I stood, we stood right there where that car hit yesterday.
And I'm going to make a prediction.
Yeah?
The health care bill is going to, they're going to pass it.
Oh, yeah, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think you're
going to. I'm not being too bald. Well, then invest, because that'll be good for the market.
Yeah. The House will pass it. Who knows what the Senate will do?
The Senate, whatever they pass, the Senate will pass. They don't have any brains over there.
1806. We swing it back to North America.
Enough of this Louisiana purchase.
I'm just going to touch on it real quick. Okay. The Cora Discovery, that's Lewis and Clark. They on this date, March 23rd, they've reached the Pacific Ocean. They've been there, and they begin their arduous journey back home. No, first of all, the journey back home wasn't rough at all.
It was that arduous, yeah.
It wasn't. Once they got past the Continental Divide, they made what was absolutely record time, because there's no previous record.
Why did they keep going? Who said they could stop at the Pacific Ocean? Get in your canoes.
Jefferson did. He wanted he wanted a report.
I know. I don't.
He
like
did.
It.
He wanted a report.
I think
he
should have kept going.
He didn't even want to send them up the coast.
Ocean. Yeah, I know. I know. Which, I'm just kidding.
Which they maybe should have. They maybe should have gone north and.
We got Alaska. Don't worry about it. Who wants British
Columbia? Yeah, but it took another 70 years before Seward could buy that.
You want another war? No, 50 years.
He bought
60,
it in 18...
60 years. 1867.
Okay, yeah, 60 years. There you go. We'll cut the difference. Seward's folly.
Huh. Seward's icebox.
Anyway, once they got over the Continental Divide and got back to the Missouri River.
Yeah, I know.
They were making tons.
Well, I'd say they're probably in a
hurry. They were making 30, 40 miles a day.
Yeah, well, everybody wants to get back.
Yeah. They made it back to St. Charles, Missouri in a hurry, which is, I think, where the journey actually ends. I don't think they even came all the way. Yeah. I think they called it quits in St. Chuck.
Listen, you read up on it. It never did interest
here.
Me.
Let me give you a book. Clark. You ready?
Yeah, give them a book. And
Undaunted Courage by Stephen Ambrose.
I think you've already given that book.
All right. I'll give it again.
I've got a book today to give.
All right. Very good. ThisDayInHistoryPodcast.com. Click on the Amazon banner. Go get yourself Undaunted Courage. You can do the same at Audible.com. Great book, great read. Armand likes Stephen Ambrose. I like Stephen Ambrose.
He's all right. Yeah.
He's a good guy. He's dead, but he's a good guy. 1857. This gentleman, he installs something at 488 Broadway in New York City. We've all ridden on it.
Well, not this one. Yes, not this one.
Hopefully not. Yeah. That
something similar.
That inspection sticker would be pretty long by now.
Yeah.
But anyway, that is Elisha Otis in the first elevator. Have you ever seen the Otis Elevator Tower in Connecticut where they do the testing?
No.
Oh, it's fabulous.
You waste a lot of time on these
excursions.
No,
it's great. It's great.
I go to Vegas. I gamble.
Yeah, ride elevators all day. If you're a kid, that's probably fun.
Hookers are better.
Yeah, it's expensive.
Not the ones I get. Not if you get ugly ones.
Oh, God. 1868, the University of California is founded in Oakland.
Yeah, I guess we're talking about Berkeley here, right?
We're talking about Berkeley, but not where Berkeley is. It's when the Organic Act is signed into law, and then, of course, unless they moved it, it gets moved up into Berkeley, which is just a little north of Oakland, not far away. 1888, in England, the Football League, the world's oldest professional association football league, is, it's founded, and it meets for the first time. Right about the time that...
When are they going to meet for the last time?
Never.
Get rid of the silliness.
Never. It's awesome.
Play real football.
They do. That is real football.
No. We play football.
No, you don't.
They play puss ball.
No, they play football. We play what's called the handling game because you handle the ball.
Ah, true. That's okay? True.
1919 in Milan, Italy, Benito Mussolini founds his fascist political movement.
Right. Laying the foundations for the New Deal.
Now, explain to me again why the term fascist, because it's Mussolini who gets credited with the fascist terminology, right?
I'm not sure where that comes from. Fascist, I believe, is a bundle of sticks. Now, I don't know why they use that, but that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Fascicle or whatever. It's Latin for a bundle of sticks.
They whip you with some sticks.
Well, I don't know.
Sticks for everybody.
No, I think it's just...
That'd be socialism.
Sticks on your back for everybody. And yeah, this is not socialism. This is close. This is what the New Deal was. We tell you what you can... you know, who you can employ, what you can distribute, what you can produce, what you can pay your workers. Believe me, that's what Mussolini loved, the New Deal. He thought it was great. He thought it was, that's what it was, fascism.
Mm-hmm.
Civilian Conservation Corps, 1 million men in army uniforms living on compounds.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's not fascism.
I didn't, well, I'm just,
that's what I'm saying. That's
just
what it is.
Sitting here nodding at you.
Well, you know that, right? 1 million men.
A million guys.
The paramilitary.
What and the they're sitting out there in the desert.
Yeah, raking leaves, and you know, and then the WPA, we piddle around.
They built some nice stuff, man.
Oh yeah,
great campgrounds.
Yeah, they chased the birds off the Washington Monument, and then they chased sagebrush around, make sure that there wasn't any tumbleweeds flying around.
Yeah, you ever see any tumbleweed out west?
That's good production.
That shit's alarming.
That's very productive
when it crosses the road in front of you.
Yeah. Well, you know what they should have done is taken away all those tractors and made people plow the land by themselves, and you know, spoonful by spoonful, etc. Then you got a lot more work. Why use steam shovels? Correct?
I'll think about that.
Yeah, think about it.
All right, halfway through the
events. Did.
Let's see who was born on this date.
Yeah, some biggies.
Yeah, we got some nice ones. 1823, I've got to start off. What do you got?
I guess that's good enough.
You got that? Okay, Schuyler Colfax. What a name.
Schuyler.
Well, I like Schuyler.
No, that's a woman's name.
It's Schuyler. Schuyler Colfax.
One of only two. Well, let's tell him who the is. Most people should know who this is, even though he's been kind of lost in the fog of history.
Well, he has been a little bit. Journalist, politician. He would be the 17th vice president of the United States.
Under whom?
Don't
look.
I'm not looking. Andrew Johnson.
No, of course not.
Well, it wasn't Lincoln.
U.S. Grant.
Grant. I was one too early. Yeah, one too early.
He's only one of two vice presidents to also be Speaker of the House. Who's the other one? You're good if you get this one. Speaking of the New Deal, I'll give you a big, big hint.
And Wallace.
His favorite, no. My favorite quote, vice president isn't worth a bucket of warm piss.
Right.
Nance Garner.
That was
I know you always liked his name. Cactus Jack Garner.
Was that FDR's?
Yeah, first. First one.
Vice
Wallace
president.
Was second.
Wallace was second. Damn it. Cactus. See, I'm off, just off by one, Armand.
Yeah, you're not quite on today.
No, I'm not.
You're unsynchronized.
An artist I like, born on this date, March 23rd, 1887.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I like Juan Gris. I like him. The cubism.
He's more colorful than Picasso. I got to give him that. But yeah. Chess boards and stuff. I don't know.
It's good.
I like something that looks like something.
I like his. It does look like something.
Yeah.
It's abstract
art.
Mess. No, it's beautiful.
I think he sold one for like $57 million last year.
Yeah, he did.
Years ago. Not he did.
Well, he's dead.
Sotheby's did, I guess.
Yeah.
2 years ago. That's a lot of money for that junk.
That's not junk.
It's crap.
Cubism. He and Picasso and Matisse.
No, Georges Braque.
And I like Braque a lot.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I might like Braque's cubism better than Picasso's.
Well, the big one was Demoiselle de d'Avignon. Who did that one?
With the Dames of Avignon is the five dames.
Yeah.
That's a Picasso.
Was that? I guess it was, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's one of my favorites. That's the one I like, actually.
But there's been a lot of interpretations of sort of that you know, because it's the five nudes that are done in the cubism form.
Yeah. Well, who's the one that painted the mustache on the Mona Lisa?
I don't know.
He wasn't even named Cubist.
No. 1905, Joan Crawford born.
Lucille LeSueur.
Have you watched Joan and Betty?
No, I haven't.
God, I mean,
well, what am I? I don't have it.
What's the point? FX, get it.
I know enough to know that they didn't get along too well, but, you know, I wrote one down that I liked a lot by her. She liked to play bitches.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of bitch in every woman, a lot in every man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's dead on the money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're a lot in both genders, absolutely.
Now, apparently, I've always heard that she put rock, you know, because that scene where Betty Davis has to drag her.
That she put the rocks to make her heavier.
She said, are you kidding? I'm not going to have Betty Davis telling everybody in Hollywood how heavy I am.
Good point.
She denied it.
Good point.
She also denied beating up her kids, but that
apparently fair point as well.
I don't know.
That's how I got
neighbor,
to know her.
Betty Hutton said she did.
That's how I came across her. Was that Mommy Dearest in
the? I don't know about that one, Christina. But she had four adopted kids. She couldn't have kids.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that one. But
all right. How about this next guy? Let's.
Was also a couple of trivia things.
Oh, okay.
So, first dancing partner Fred Astaire.
No kidding.
On screen. Yep. Dancing lady. Her last movie. Now you got to see this to see how bad it is. And no wonder she retired. Trog. Have you ever seen it?
It's T-R-O-G?
Yeah, it's Trog? Hilarious. Yeah, hilarious.
What is
yeah.
this, like from the late 60s or early
70s? 1970, yeah. Trog is like this Neanderthal that she discovered.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's, but she was always, I got to admit, she was always a big movie star, you know, and she was born on the board of directors of Pepsi.
Which I do why, remember that because which is why she Betty, had married.
Which is why Betty Davis put a Coke machine on the
on
set.
The set.
Did she do that? I'm sure they put that in the little.
Well, no, I remember
biopic.
Mommy Dearest, the scene where in the Pepsi boardroom.
Yeah, yeah, she was married to the.
And
the,
she's
the
laying head. Down the law to the other board members.
She was tough. She was.
But
tough
who was
to
the
deal.
Guy? Who was the guy?
Well, I think it was like her fourth husband was the.
Yeah.
He was the director of it, but then he died, I think.
And right, and
she
got.
Over, yeah.
She was Pepsi Cola.
Crap, yeah. And let's see, what else do we have on her? Oh, they had a contest to name her. Like I said, Louis B. Mayer thought Lucille Lesueur. Which is kind of nice. It sounds too much like sewer. So he said, change it. She always hated that name, and then she was supposed to be named Joan something, but that name had already been taken by some.
But Crawford?
Joan Crawford.
Why Crawford?
So somebody won $500 for that. It's got a kind of contest to name her.
Something so a little better than Crawford.
Yeah, I like it. Joan Crawford.
Well, the name, it's a strong name, but it's not
like her,
feminine.
Like shoulder
it's
pads.
Not feminine.
And what movie did she win her Academy Award for? You should know this.
Well, it's not all about Eve.
No, she wasn't even in that.
It's Betty. I don't know.
She didn't win either, but she was in that. Yeah, it was Mildred Pierce, 1945.
45?
Which is actually a script she didn't want. I mean, nobody wanted it.
Nobody,
really.
Yeah. That was some big subject matter for 45, wasn't it?
I got another sheet. I think I'm missing something because I had some other notes.
Armand.
Keep talking.
I'll keep talking. You go find your notes.
Go to your next
one. You're all out of whack today, man. Well, we got 1910, Akira Kurosawa. Happy birthday. This is the director, famous Japanese director, Seven Samurai, which The Magnificent Seven would be based on. Ron, another one as well. And 1912, one of Armand and I's favorites, Werner von Braun, the German-American physicist and engineer. He would pass away in 1977. We wouldn't have gotten to the moon without him. So happy birthday. This is the only time I say happy birthday to a Nazi.
All right.
You are a mess. You are a mess.
I'm going to talk about Werner von Braun you're talking about.
Well, do you have anything on Akira Kurosawa? Do you like the work?
Yeah, I like Seven Samurai, Ron. I liked, what was the other one? Rashomon, which is like
I have not
classic.
Seen Rashomon.
Yeah, Rashomon. Okay. Remade, of course, with William Shatner, old buddy, and Paul Newman. It's about a rape. This guy and his wife. The guy's killed. The wife is raped. I think it was the other way around. No, she was raped, but somebody was killed. Anyway, it's the story of it is given by five different people, and they each have a different story of what exactly happened.
Yeah, good.
So
good.
It's been used over and over again.
That's a great device.
Yeah. Anyway, Werner von Braun, though.
Yeah, let's go to von Braun.
Now, he was a Nazi, but he had to be, or they wouldn't let him. They would probably executed him, really.
Well, I mean, look, he wasn't a foaming at the mouth, let's go to the concentration camp type of Nazi.
They accused him of that. You know,
I know.
Because he had a lot of slaves. In fact, more slaves died at the labor camp at Peenemünde than died from the V-2 rockets.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, the guy was a physicist, and we needed him, and we used him.
How did the U.S. wind up
you know
with
what,
the
you know,
best?
Who was it? Mort Saul said that? He goes, well, he was apparently to him, he goes, I want to go, you know, I want to be an astrophysicist. I want to send people to Mars, et cetera. And in fact, that was the name of his biography or biopic for him, I Aim at the Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mort Saul said, I aim at the stars, but occasionally I miss and hit London. Yeah, so he was, so yeah. Anyway,
no.
Where
would the if you take von Braun out of the equation?
Well, him and Goddard. No,
okay,
yeah, well, it takes longer.
So Goddard, you know, was able to launch a solid fueled rocket in the 1920s.
Yeah, Goddard was.
Von Braun coming 15 years later, getting
the
V2 up.
The Russians
up
had
and
got
running.
Him. It wouldn't have been good.
If the Russians had got him, but how did the U.S. get all? The really good ones.
Operation Paperclip.
Yeah.
Read the book. There is a book called Operation Paperclip.
It's sitting on Big E's desk, the host of Surreal Talk.
You got it?
Yes, I bought it for him because we're going to do a joint show on it someday.
Oh.
Because it's a fascinating.
I want to read it again, too. I read it a long time ago.
Yeah.
What tongue of, anyway, yeah, they got him in Austria, I think. He moved to Austria or got out of there. You know, we would have probably been Gagarin probably wouldn't have been the first in space if it wasn't for Von Braun. Von Braun was very, let's just say he
was meticulous and not a risk taker.
Right, right. So, you know, 3 weeks, they were ready 3 weeks before.
They could have sent it.
They could have sent Shepard into orbit.
He wants to be sure.
Yep, he wouldn't do it. So Gagarin was number one. But Gagarin had a nicer smile than Alan Shepard. So, you know, we talked about Gagarin as my smile.
I would have liked to meet Gagarin.
Yeah, you want to have dinner with him.
I do. I want to know what it's like to be first up there, man. Oh, no. With Von Braun, it'd be fascinating.
Oh, really? You mean eat with a Nazi?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, like you said, it's like Nazi light.
Oh, all right.
You know, okay, diet Nazi, another, if you will.
See, I got a couple before. 1893, this is one I want to discuss. Cedric Gibbons.
Cedric Gibbons?
Yep. This guy has a record.
Sounds like he's in ZZ Top.
Nope. Cedric Gibbons, he designed the Oscar. He's production designer for
MGM.
That's
the guy?
He had it in his contract that every movie that MGM came out with, he would get a credit as production designer, whether he worked on it or not. Hence, this guy has the most credits of anyone.
Did he get a royalty with the credit?
No, but he was on salary, I think. Oh. 1,500 credits. He won 11 Academy Awards. He designed the Academy Awards.
Sharp.
Now, a couple questions. How tall is the Academy Award? Academy Award for merit, by the way.
Do we count the pedestal?
Yes.
12 inches.
13 and a half.
Okay.
How much does it weigh?
They always say it's heavy, so I'm going to guess it weighs about 2.5 pounds.
8.5 pounds.
8.5 pounds.
8.5 pounds.
No wonder Cher uses it as a doorstop.
38 nominations, you know, and yep.
Now, what's the guy called? Is he really called Oscar? The man?
The Academy Award for Merit.
Yeah, but what's the man, the little statuette man called? I thought he had a name.
No, they called him. There are conflicting stories about why he's called Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, somebody thought it was looked like Robert Herrick, who was like the president of the Academy. In fact, the building is called the Robert Herrick Building.
For the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
It's on Vine and Fountain, which is right by my office.
Oh,
I used to walk there. And then, but Betty Davis, apparently, when she won, said, looks like my Uncle Oscar. So they don't know which one.
All right.
But anyway, he designed it. And he's got the record for the most.
What year was he born again?
1893.
1893.
Now, the other one I have, and this guy drove me nuts.
Oh, boy.
Pierre Simon, Marquis de la Place.
We got Marquis a Frenchie.
Marquis de la Place. Now, anybody knows anything about mathematics, anybody that's taken calculus knows that Laplace transformations will drive you nuts. The Fourier transformations we did. Here we go. We're talking about time derivatives.
Yeah.
Time functions versus
what are we transforming? Is this some advanced quadratic equation here?
No, integrals.
These are integrals.
Yoy. And apparently it transfers the time integral to the frequency integral, which makes these equations much easier. Not for me, because Calc 2 kicked my butt.
And it kicked a lot of people's butts, be honest.
Now, Laplace's demon, do you know what that is?
No.
I don't either.
Is that an unsolvable equation or something?
Let me think about that. Laplace's demon. Anyway, I'll think of it. Anyway, he also did the heat equation, worked on the heat equation. Speed of sound depends on the heat capacity of the air, which it moves through, which was pretty momentous.
Yeah, that will change
guy,
it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he and Napoleon were pretty close. He was Napoleon's minister of the interior.
Was he ever alive at the same time as René Descartes?
No, Descartes was before that.
Much before.
Yeah.
So he stood on the shoulders of Descartes.
Yeah. Shoulders of giant. Euler more than Descartes, though.
Yeah.
And listen, Napoleon, he advised him not to go into Russia. So he was pretty bright. Napoleon gets back, and Laplace didn't look too good. So Napoleon says, you've lost some weight. You look very thin. He said, well, I've lost a daughter. His daughter had died. And Napoleon responded,
I've lost an army.
Gallic, with typical Gallic cynicism. You are a mathematician. Put this event into an equation, and you shall have zero. I guess he didn't really give a shit. So there he goes. And
that's pretty rough.
Yeah, and he's kind of famous for saying, they asked him if he believed in God. You know, he says, I have no need for that hypothesis. When he's talking about all his equations. Because he's a big astronomy guy.
It's all hypothesis, right?
And they talked about, you know, the creationists.
Yeah.
So I'm going to look up Laplace.
Yeah, you do that. 1929, Roger Bannister born. Your first sub-4-minute
miler.
Yeah, he was a neurologist.
Yep.
Now, I'm sure he's not the first human to do the mile in under 4 minutes, but he did so where it's recorded at a meet that happened.
I think it was indoors, though. Wasn't
it? I thought he did it at the Olympics in Melbourne. Am I not right? Is that wrong?
No, it wasn't at the Olympics. It was 1954.
That's not an Olympic year?
No.
No, it's not an Olympic year.
I think it was indoors.
Where would he have done it indoors? Was it like Crystal Palace or something?
No, it was, you know, the track. They'd run out of the track.
Well, let's see here. He achieved the feat at the Eifley Road Track in Oxford.
Oxford, that's right.
Yeah, 3:59.4.
Right.
3:59.4. Did it in 54, of course.
Oh, that's okay. Right. Here's Laplace's demon. Let's see if you agree with this, because it's wrong, so you probably do.
No, sure, yeah.
Okay, if a being, omniscient being, knew everything about the universe at any specific time, he could tell the future. Why is that not true? He's based on classical mechanics and Newtonian, that sort of thing, and all that, you know. If he knew, had all the knowledge available, he would be able to, and that's been refuted. Two words.
Two words on why it's refuted? I don't know.
Quantum mechanics. There is no such thing. There's randomness. Quantum mechanics means randomness.
Yeah, I agree with it.
So there, it doesn't matter how much you know now.
Right.
Because everything's a probability anyway.
You can only use your best make probability your best guess.
Right.
Is what you can do.
Which probably would have made Laplace really, probably made him happy. Because he's a big probability and statistics guy.
I am not the omniscient God believer.
Yeah, but even if you were, you still couldn't tell the future.
Right.
Because of quantum mechanics.
And I'm not.
But I used to believe that, Laplace's demon.
Mm-hmm. 19, let's see here, 49, Rick Ocasek, lead singer of the Cars.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Ocasek.
I don't know.
Yeah, I like Ocasek. Okay. 1951, Ron Jaworski, great football commentator.
He made me a lot of money.
He did?
Yeah, he used to do Monday night for
ESPN.
Yes, he
did.
That guy called like seven, I don't know how many games in a row, against the spread. I think they told him to stop it.
Yeah.
Told him to cut it out. I used to wait for him. I didn't bet until Ron Jaworski, and then I put my bet in.
Not only was he a good quarterback when I was a kid, you were a kid, Armand, for the Philadelphia Eagles. He was with the L.A. Rams, I think, for a cup of coffee. But he watches
Harold Carmichael,
yes,
remember?
I remember he throwing a screen pass to Harold Carmichael that went for 91 yards.
Yeah. That's a pretty good play.
Yeah. And Jaws didn't throw the ball more than 10 yards. Screen pass.
Yeah, well,
barely threw it forward.
I don't think he could throw it.
Almost counted as a run. But he watches more game film almost than any other human being, because he has NFL films in New Jersey where they have all the tape, and all the tape comes in each week. And I don't, it's real film, by the way. And they sit,
not digital.
They sit in that projection room and they look at every play from every game. It's really amazing what they have there. He can break it down. Those guys at NFL Films, which Ed Sable and Steve Sable created.
I'd have sent him a card.
Oh,
he made me some
man.
Money.
All right. He was good. Oh, he's a good guy, too. Just a good guy. Rex Tillerson, born
another
in 1952. He's going to be busy.
Secretary of State, baby.
He's going to be busy. He just got back from Korea.
CEO of Exxon.
1953, Shaka Khan.
Mm.
Yeah? No? 1955, Moses Malone.
I didn't know he was dead. Too bad.
Moses Malone?
Yeah,
he died last year, buddy. Or 2 years ago. Yeah.
Died young.
Straight out of high school? Into the NBA?
Yeah, I
played
remember that.
For the Spirits of St. Louis in the ABA.
Right.
Then played for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Cute basketball.
And won a championship with Dr. J. That was a great team in the early 80s. Dr. J, Moses Malone, Bobby Jones, Anthony Tony.
Doesn't he have a record or something?
Remember that bunch? Oh, they were good. 1957, Amanda Plummer, nice actress. Like her work. Pulp Fiction.
Which one did she play?
Honey Bunny.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was good.
1959, Catherine Keener.
Yolanda.
Mm-hmm.
Be cool.
Be cool. 1953, Catherine Keener. Ever seen The 40-Year-Old Virgin?
Yeah, but, you know, last I saw her in was Get Out, that one that came out.
Yeah.
Boy, she looks old.
Well, she is older now.
Wow. She is
but
old.
But she's a good-looking lady.
She was.
No, she still is.
No, she's jowly. You see,
no,
she put on some weight. No. Did you see the movie?
No.
I was shocked.
It's a good film.
I thought it was okay, but
I heard it was a good film.
Not bad.
1973, Jason Kidd. Happy birthday, Jason. And 1976, Carrie Russell.
Now, I think this is The Waitress, right? Didn't she make The Waitress?
Yeah, she did. Right, but she's also, right now, she's the star.
Poker player?
I guess not. I don't know. But she's the star of The Americans, where she plays the Soviet spy. Her and her husband are Soviet spies living in Washington, D.C. in the early to mid-80s.
Oh,
yeah, total.
80. Oh, is this like, is she like Alder James or one of them?
Yes, that, yeah.
Okay.
They're living the suburban life.
Yeah.
Well, and in the meantime, they're offing people and everything and then coming home and taking the kids to soccer.
It's the American dream.
It's a hell of a show, The Americans. And then 1992, Kyrie Irving. He's one of these NBA players that believes the world is flat.
Okay. What does that mean?
There's a whole trend of people who now believe the world is flat.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not.
All right.
Flat.
I haven't heard of this.
It's a whole trend. Flat Earth. Yeah, it's a whole trend.
Well, anybody who believes in global warming will believe in a flat Earth.
1956, back to the events that shaped our world. This is a good one. Pakistan, and I didn't realize it was Pakistan that became the first official Islamic Republic in the world.
Okay, yeah.
I would have always assumed that would have been Saudi Arabia.
Well, I don't know if that's a republic.
But it's not, because it's, problem. You know why? It's a kingdom.
Yeah.
And that is why I was off.
Yeah.
You got me. That's exactly the reason.
That's kind of an oxymoron to me. Muslim republic?
By definition.
Yeah, you got Sharia law.
By definition, if you have Sharia law, you do not have a democracy.
What does Islam mean?
Therefore,
submission.
Submission.
To
therefore,
Allah.
You cannot have a republic.
That makes sense. Okay.
So the same thing for Iran. It's why you can't export democracy. They
tell George Bush.
I'd love to. If I had a time machine, say, George, they don't need this.
He
they
wouldn't listen to
they
you.
Already have laws.
Yeah.
They're not going to listen to
well,
you.
He's not the first, though. Believe
no,
me.
I know. Futility.
Yeah, we're exporting
1965,
our brand of democracy.
NASA sends up Gemini 3, first two-man space flight. That included Gus Grissom and John Young.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Hell of a career for Gus Grissom, man.
And for the fifth time, I'm going to ask you, who is the only astronaut in the Apollo, Gemini, and Mercury projects?
Walter Chaffee.
You're close. Wally Schirra.
Schirra. 1977. Now, this we're going to talk about because I like this guy.
I think it's Roger Chaffee, wasn't it?
Roger Chaffee?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds better. The first of the Nixon interviews. 12 of which would be recorded.
You know, they're not that great. I've seen
they aren't.
They're boring as hell.
But the movie
was better. Yeah.
Frost Nixon, directed by Ron Howard,
wasn't bad.
Was terrific. David Frost, who's by no means a great journalist, is basically a game show
he
host.
He just died, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He interviews Richard Nixon about the Watergate scandal and the Nixon tapes. Highly recommend the movie Nixon Frost. It's good.
It's a good movie.
Great role playing.
Who played him? Was that
Robert?
It wasn't. Don't tell me. Was it Frank Langella?
Yeah,
Frank Langella played Nixon.
Yes, he did.
Who played?
David Frost. It's the guy who plays Tony Blair, and he's always the British guy. He's in the Damn United. He's a good actor. I like him. Let's see.
Roger Chaffee. Yes.
Yeah, Frost Nixon. Oh, that was 2008. Wow, that's been out for a while. That's been out for a while. Let me see here. Yeah, Michael Sheen is the actor's name.
Sheen, okay.
And Kevin Bacon has a great supporting role in that movie, folks, playing one of Nixon's aides, who was just like blindly loyal to old Tricky Dick.
Well, you had to be, or you wouldn't be.
He wouldn't get to be around. Right. Also, Sam Rockwell on the other side, supporting one of the producers, supporting Frost, who would really get up in his grill about not being tough enough, had a tremendous role. As James Reston Jr.
Oh, you know, I missed a birthday today.
Who'd you miss?
Victor Korchnoi.
Korchnoi?
Yeah.
That guy owes me money.
Well, do you know who he is?
No.
You jest, you scoff, you sneer. All right. But probably the best player ever never to be world chess champion.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He lost to Karpov twice. Three times, actually.
Hmm.
If he'd have beat him the first time, he would have taken Fischer's title.
Have you seen the billboards around town for chess?
Well, we have the Hall of Fame and everything here, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So that's highly recommend Frost Nixon. 1983, the SDI.
That's right, Strategic Defense Initiative.
Now, Armand loves this.
I do love it. I wish we'd do it now.
Let me tell you, I thought it was cool as hell. Honestly.
Well, there's a thing. At that time, but people that had a legitimate argument that it was an anti-ballistic missile defense system,
right,
which you're not going to shoot them all down. So the argument was, if you shoot, that's kind of, you know, that's a little dicey. But nowadays, we're much more, we got a problem with rogue states, EMP and all that stuff. So it makes sense to have this.
I agree.
In fact, I'd spend money on this before I spend on another.
I want to EMP the whole damn North Korea right now.
Well,
EMP the whole thing right now.
I don't think we even have to do that. I think it's getting there with those viruses. That's what knocked out Iran.
Well, that was Stuxnet.
Yeah, right.
Have you watched the documentary on Stuxnet?
No, but
it's fascinating. Oh, it's fascinating. So on this date,
I see why we can't do it to them too.
President Reagan makes his initial proposal to develop the technology to intercept enemy missiles. Now that technology does get developed. The Patriot system, which is deployed in the Gulf War.
It's worked before.
And it does knock down,
hitting a bullet with a bullet.
It may not get everyone.
No. That was the argument against it, and it was prohibitively expensive.
Of course in 1983
but that was
it
was the idea,
expensive.
Because if we did it, they'd have to do it, and their economy couldn't stand it. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah. No, there was a method to this madness.
Right.
Spin them into
Where's
oblivion.
Where'd that come from?
A method to this madness? I don't know.
There's method in it. I have seen his madness, and there is method in it. Polonius. Hamlet.
Oh. Well, let me quote the great Captain Willard from Apocalypse Now. When Colonel Kurtz says, "Are my methods unsound?"
I don't see my methods unsound.
Now you're going to...
I don't see any method.
You're an errand boy sent by grocery clerks to collect the...
By the way, there's this mimic guy. He's a comedian, but he's also in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And he's been doing impersonations of, you know, everyone like that, you know, auditions.
Yeah.
Like Christopher Walken auditioning for a movie that he's not in. Oh, they're phenomenal. You got
my favorite is Frank Gorshin. If you ever heard him do Burt Lancaster.
Yes.
He's hilarious.
No, it's good.
The Joker.
He's really good, man.
He's great.
There's got to be some Gorshin
Frank Gorshin
imitations on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
And finally, for my events, 2001, the Mir space station. Well,
come down.
They dispose of it. Here's how you dispose of a space station, by the way. What you do is very simple. You let it go dead, come out of orbit. It'll break up naturally in the atmosphere, and it'll just fall into pieces around the Earth. And this time,
more controlled than
the Mir. Well, because they
it wasn't like Skylab.
Skylab, willy nilly. Skylab hit Australia, right?
This was in the South Pacific.
This came in the South Pacific, near Fiji.
Yeah.
So they had an intent of where to try to do it.
Yeah,
but
they tried to hit Fiji, but they missed. All right. Anyway, you know that you were there actually talking about making this into a movie and TV studio out there in space.
I like that idea.
Well, it cost too much money, and they didn't want to spend it.
Well, the Vomit Rocket cost a lot of money too.
Yeah, they spent on the International Space Station though instead.
So, what's the event?
What does Mir mean?
Peace.
Very good.
Well, there's also a Mir card in Russia that is replacing MasterCard and Visa over there. Yeah, the state bank took control of everything.
Here we go.
So you got a truly socialist credit card. How do you like that?
Yeah, your money's
socialist. Safe. Handing you some credit.
Sure. I'd pay that if I were you. Putin collects his debts.
So what do you think here? Do we have fascism as affecting the world we live in the most? Elevators?
No.
Do we have
Patrick Henry's speech?
We have Patrick Henry?
That was the flame that lit the torch that was the American Revolution.
I got to agree with you. It's Patrick Henry. Right out of the gate. A number one.
Talk about any of his other bullshit.
A number one
with
the
elevator's
bullet,
a big deal, too.
Well, the elevator is a big deal.
But somebody else would have come up with that.
Surely.
All right.
If it wasn't Otis, it would have been Redding.
I'm not even going to dignify that with a raspberry.
Please don't. All right. Now,
it's dignified.
I got a couple deaths for you today. And this guy, I'm fascinated by this guy. He died on this date in 1964. He only lived to be 60.
Yeah, he had gallbladder
and
trouble.
And he could have had some amazing roles, in the late 60s and into the 70s. But Peter Lorre, of Sidney Greenstreet and Mary Astor, Humphrey Bogart fame. What a great team they had going. I still contend, had Raiders of the Lost Ark been built or made in late 30s, as Spielberg intended it, as the Saturday afternoon B movie, that Peter Lorre would have played the guy in the black coat who burns his hand on the medallion.
Yeah.
That would have been him.
It was your fault. You bungled it. You stupid fathead. You bloated idiot.
So what favorite Peter Lorre?
Right there. That's Maltese Falcon.
Mr. Spade.
All right, yeah, so anyway.
Did he talk like that all the time?
Yeah, Laszlo Lowenstein was his real name. Jewish guy.
So at a dinner party, he'd come up to you.
Yeah, that right. His eyes were, you know, I think he was exophthalmic, which was hyperthyroid.
He had a thyroid condition.
Yeah, that's why his eyes bulged out.
Gotcha.
I don't know, but he had a gallbladder problem.
Gotcha.
He was always in pain, this guy, because of his gallbladder, and he was addicted to opioids, morphine.
So then he's backed
that's
up
what
as
killed
well.
Him. Yeah.
No one knew about that opioid constipation back then.
Yeah, I'm sure he didn't take, I'm sure he had a rather rocky time of it on the toilet, calculi. And, but anyway, I think I've told this story about his daughter. He had one daughter.
Was he married?
Yeah, twice.
Twice, okay.
I believe.
Because, you know, a lot of people think he's LGBT.
No, I do not like men. I like women. Mm. He woman.
So anyway, we're talking about his daughter.
Yeah.
This is long after he died. She's driving around in 1977. Her car gets carjacked by Beyoncé and Bono, otherwise known as the Hillside Stranglers.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're going to strangle her.
Oh, that's crazy.
And she said, my dad was Peter Lorre, and they let her go.
What an excuse.
They were big fans.
I don't know
who they were.
I don't know if you can use that excuse today.
They got in her car and everything, and then she I guess.
My dad's Peter Lorre.
Yeah.
You're free to go.
Yeah, they got out of the car, and they left. They were going to kill her. And she didn't even know that until she saw them on TV when they caught them. Wow, these are the guys that jumped my car.
So the Maltese Falcon for you, clearly. The best.
Man, he's good in Casablanca, too. You despise me, don't you, Rick? I don't know. If I gave you any thought, I probably would. He was Ugarte.
There's not a line wrong in that film, is there?
Greatest screenplay ever written. That's what they say. That's the.
Where would you put Falcon compared to. Because there's hardly a line wrong
but
in Falcon.
But Casablanca was an original screenplay. Falcon was
is an adapted.
Yeah,
in fact, Falcon isn't. You know, Falcon isn't even the first Falcon.
Betty Davis was winning one with Warren Williams.
About 32, 33,
35.
35.
Yeah, Warren Williams was Sam Spade. Didn't have Sidney Greenstreet.
What a great troupe they had, though. Greenstreet, Bogart, and Lorre.
Yep.
I predict with CGI and everything, if you can get the rights to their estate. You will see films in the future starring those pairings.
Well, they did that
again
with Peter Cushing in that Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that. I was watching it.
Well, they did it with Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, that too. Well, she was only one spot.
Yeah,
though.
But not because she was dead. She hadn't died.
Yeah, she was fat.
No, because they needed the young version. And they say when Carrie saw it, she didn't realize it was a complete CGI. She thought they had just taken film stock
and
blended it in. But it was because when they did it, that's what I assumed they did.
I didn't know about that, but I knew. Well, I figured that when I saw Peter Cushing.
But everyone,
I knew that
everyone I saw the movie with was like, "Oh, I couldn't tolerate the Cushing and Carrie Fisher CGI moments." I was like, "What?"
I don't know why they didn't do Alec Guinness too.
I don't know. I don't know if they have the estate rights to do it.
That's the question.
Because Alec was a little particular, and he did not like Star Wars.
Yeah,
he would tell people, "I don't want to talk about Star Wars, kid."
The only reason he did the second one, the second one was like one day of filming.
Yeah, it was very. He had no. There's a pub in London where if you bring in a ticket stub to an Alec Guinness film, you get a free pint.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but try finding a ticket stub to an Alec Guinness film these days. Exactly. 2011, the passing of Liz Taylor.
Yeah, we could go on about her.
Do you know all the seven husbands?
Ooh, Mike Todd, Nicky Hilton.
Nicky Hilton.
Richard Burton.
Was Nicky Hilton first?
Mike Wilding. I don't know. Was it Nicky Hilton? I'm not sure who she married first. That's four.
Yeah.
Who was the truck driver, the last guy?
Fortensky?
Fortensky,
I think it was.
That's
right.
That's five. Who was the man, that's pretty good.
So I had a chance to see her once, and I completely passed it up because I was young. I didn't give a shit. So
was she married to Eddie Fisher? Was she married to Eddie?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
We could look this up, but
Maybe if she was.
So she did. She was doing. She did that White Diamonds. She had
perfume.
So,
right?
So the Galleria, a big, very fancy mall, opened up, and And she was doing an appearance at one of the anchor stores there. And I forget which anchor store it was, like a Macy's or Nordstrom, something like that. And they were lined, you know, the people were lined up miles, right? And someone I was with wanted to go see her. And I was like, I ain't standing in line for this. And I remember going shopping, eating at the food court, and then just meeting them afterwards.
Well, that's where you find – that's where you probably run into Liz at that time.
At the food court?
Fried chicken joint.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, she and I could probably throw back some fried chicken. But I do remember some lady walking out going, her eyes truly are violet.
Oh, yeah.
And they were so amazed.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, maybe I should have seen this guy.
I know a guy that had violet eyes.
No
man,
kidding.
That guy got laid. Oh,
no,
my
I bet
God.
He did.
Conrad Hilton Jr.
Yes.
Okay. Well, didn't they call him Nicky Hilton?
I thought they called him Nicky.
Mike Wilding. Mike Todd, of course.
She got married.
Eddie
Fisher. First time she was about 17, right?
Yeah, Conrad. Well, yeah. Because, 1950. She was born in 1933. That's it. Yep. Richard Burton. John Warner. Congressman.
Warner?
Larry Fortensky.
Larry Fortensky.
Yeah, John Warner. That's the one I always
forget. Well, she said, I remember Georgia Frontier saying this. She goes, everyone thinks we were loose. No, if you wanted to sleep with someone, you had to marry him. That's why Liz and I got married so many times.
That makes sense.
Yeah. There you go. 2016, Joe Garagiola Sr., great St. Louisan.
Yeah.
The answer to a trivia question, name the street that three Hall of Famers lived on.
Ooh. Well, who's the other third, though?
The third one is you got Yogi Berra.
Of course.
You got Joe Garagiola. You got Jack Buck.
Oh, all right, yeah. Okay, I'll give you that. Okay.
The street, Elizabeth Avenue, on the hill, the Italian section of St. Louis.
All right.
Now, they didn't live there together for a long time, but and still, Barra Park is still there to this day. And Mickey Garagiola, Joe's brother.
Yeah, he's still around.
I don't.
He used to be the announcer on Wrestling at
the Chase. But Mickey Garagiola Jr., here's another trivia question for you, Armand. You ready?
I'm ready.
He swears he was there the night toasted ravioli was invented by accident.
Oh, okay. Could be.
They had plate of ravioli. Someone accidentally knocked it into the French fry fryer.
Yeah.
They brought it out, not knowing.
The greatest
accident.
They put it on,
the
discovery of penicillin.
They put it on the bar and, letting it cool off or something because they didn't want to throw it away right away because it was hot.
I think we'd all have been better off had they thrown it away.
No. Toasted ravioli is the bomb. It's awesome. Yeah. And the guys at the bar, Mickey being one of them, started eating them and then asked for more of those things that you did where you cook the ravioli.
Okay.
And they said, what are you talking about?
I get the idea. All right. It's like potato chips, too.
Right, exactly.
All right.
I mean, beautiful accident. I'm telling you.
What serendipity.
I love toasted ravioli. Most Americans are going, what the hell are you talking about?
I should have known you'd leave out the most.
Who, Ken Howard? The White Shadow?
I like Ken Howard. Yeah, that was a good show, actually.
And he passed away in 2016.
Yeah, no. Come on now.
Who did I leave out?
Friedrich Hayek. Oh, man. How many times? I even lent you the book, The Road to Serfdom.
Yes.
So you didn't deign to read it.
It's on my desk.
No, it isn't. I took it back.
I'm
not going to leave it there for anybody.
Well, who else is going to pick it up?
A lot of people. Anybody that's got some brains.
None of those Neanderthals are going to touch it.
Friedrich Hayek died in 1992, a dark, dismal day for economics. This guy was, just call him God.
Okay.
Because Milton Friedman's God, and this guy was Milton Friedman's big influence.
Oh,
so
he's part of the Trinity.
The influence.
The economic
guy. Yeah,
Trinity.
This is the whole,
is he a Chicago school guy?
Yeah. Well, eventually he was Austrian school.
Austrian school then.
But taught at UCLA for a while.
Okay, he taught at UCLA. Did he teach at University of Chicago?
Yeah, philosophy.
Well, he taught philosophy.
Yeah, but he was one of our great.
Interesting.
Great, he's big enemy of
Haynes. Was Friedman
Haynes.
A?
Yeah. Well, he actually had a class on the philosophy of science.
Yes.
Which was attended by Leo Szilard and Enrico Fermi.
Holy smoke!
Yeah. So you got some big hitters there.
Damn. The University of Chicago has really had it going on.
And then when Thatcher was not quite the prime minister yet, but she was like one of the leaders of the Conservative Party.
Well, she was a leader. She was Tory leadership,
well, they
basically.
They didn't know where they were going. Which direction are we going?
And
She pulled out Hayek's book.
Hey, dude, I'm here to tell you. Karl Rove, Donald Rumsfeld, and Dick Cheney did the exact same thing. That's how you come up with trickle-down economics.
That term, I don't know why you even use that. Nobody has ever used that. I dare you. I'll buy you lunch if you find me one person.
George Bush?
He did not use that term.
Voodoo economics in the 1980s?
Correct. He said it as a derisive term. But nobody who ever espouses low taxes calls it trickle-down economics. Nobody. You're talking about the people that despise it, you know, and it's used as a term of derision and a pejorative, but mm-hmm. nobody ever uses it.
How do you classify it? Voodoo economics then? That's not a pejorative term?
The idea is that if people have more taxes, that the government, or less taxes, the government actually makes more revenue as defined by the curve.
When, which and curve it, would that be?
Oh, I knew you'd ask.
The Laffer curve?
Laffer curve. Art Laffer's curve. And it's been proven over and over again. It's been proven, you know, even during the Bush administration, during the Kennedy administration, during everybody's administration.
No, the Laffer curve didn't come up during the Kennedy administration.
Yeah, but it's been proven that the revenues did go up as the taxes went down. People don't care about that. People like you, it's not fair. The rich should not get less.
No, that has nothing to do with fair.
What to you is the purpose of a tax? What are taxes for? To fund the government, correct? Right.
Well, it should be to fund communal projects. Okay. I'm a big proponent of municipal taxes. In fact, I would prefer municipal bonds where you just pay to buy the bond.
Regardless, but the idea, the philosophy of taxation is, but to some people, it is to redistribute wealth.
Yeah, to a lot of people, it is to redistribute wealth.
And that's where this trickle-down bullshit comes from.
Yeah.
That nobody has ever used.
I tend to think of it as communal projects, like our sewers.
Well, that's there you go. That's municipal.
And that's why I love municipal things.
Okay, sewers, the roads, and defense.
Well, your streets?
How much do you think of our taxes go to that stuff, though? I mean, a pittance.
I don't know
where our taxes go. They go to Medicare, Medicaid, entitlements, and defense. That's where they go.
They do.
Well, and even defense is going lower and lower.
What?
It is.
Look at it as a part of the budget.
Right. It is. As a part of the budget. As a part of the GDP, it has gone down.
No.
It's gone down.
Your budget and your GDP are two different things. You know this.
As percentage of the GDP, it has gone down.
Yes, as a percentage of GDP,
okay.
it has gone
down.
As a percentage
down.
Of the budget, it's gone up.
Not really.
The proposed budget, it's not gone up
this
on this
year,
new proposed budget.
Yeah, this year it has.
Okay, thank
but
you.
But not as a percentage of GDP.
I didn't say it was a percentage of GDP.
Okay, well,
because
that's,
as
but
your
that's
other,
how you measure it.
As your other sectors of GDP grow, naturally that one gets a lower percentage.
Well, why? We mean naturally. Why shouldn't it?
Why? Because of the rule of mathematics.
Yeah, but why? Why are you giving away all this other stuff? At least with defense, you get something. Not that I'm a big proponent of defense, but come on. This is crazy.
What's crazy?
Medicare, Medicaid, that's
crazy.
Oh,
that, okay.
Entitlements, welfare, the welfare state. And unlimited immigration? That's crazy. Milton Friedman. You can't have a welfare state and open borders. Where do you think all our money goes? It's crazy. And Hayek knew it too. Read The Road to Serfdom. Probably the greatest book ever
written.
Should
never have let you Armenians in.
Well, that's true. You shouldn't have. But I'm here now and I'm a citizen. Can't do anything about it. But don't let any more in. That's okay with me.
Once I got
here.
You
want to close the door.
Shut the door.
Right. You want to close the door behind me. It's okay with me. Right.
Well, at least you're honest.
Yeah. Don't let any more in. Who wants them? No problem. At least I'm not a hypocrite. But that trickle-down economics has never been used by anybody, not any true economist, conservative, liberal, or whatever you would call it. But Friedrich Hayek was a genius. I mean, this guy was a colossus. And we petty men walk about between his huge legs, peeping about for dishonorable graves.
Who said that?
Cassius.
Uh-huh. He didn't know Hayek,
Julius
though.
Caesar, Act 4.
He didn't know Hayek, though.
Well, he should have. We should all know Hayek.
All right. That'll do it
Read
for...
Read The Road to Serfdom.
That'll do it for March the 23rd. Good-spirited show, Armand. Thank you very much for producer Andrew Allen and Brian Kroc. This has been This Day in History. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/thisdayinhistorypodcast, and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean. We will talk to you next week on not the 24th, 25th, or 26th, but Monday the 27th will be our next show because I am on the road tomorrow. Little NCAA basketball, folks.
Going to a socialist meeting somewhere?
No, I'm going to the extremely capitalistic event of the NCAA tournament.
And you're paying for it.
Oh yeah, hell good. Yes, I'm paying for it.
All right. See, now I wouldn't go if you paid me.
Well, see, unlike you, I'll buy a ticket at the going rate. That's Armand. I'm Tony. We'll talk to you next time here on This Day in History, part of lineupmedia.fm. So long.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.